What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time, was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done, the moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go?
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome again to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, May the 6th, 2011, if you're listening to our archive on the web, and it's not that date. And just remember, if it happened after this date, we don't know about it yet, so don't blame us. Why didn't he mention? Well, okay, so May 6th, 2011, and I'm here joined in the studio. My name is Jay Koronek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dennis Reimars. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. How are you?
Well, Michigan springtime, flu season, whatever, I'm only about 60%, but at least I can talk.
Well, 60% Jay Kornick's better than 100% of most people.
Well, it's easy to talk, actually. Walking is another problem.
Well, good. Well, let's not walk this show then.
No, we won't stand up. We're going to do this one seated. Okay. I thought, you know, people asked me 2 weeks ago, why didn't you talk about Reverend Jones? And now this week I'm getting people, why don't you talk about Bin Laden? Well, I was just looking for some point of view that wasn't covered on other stations.
Because we've been saturated with this stuff.
Well, of course. I think everybody's heard everything. Except I got this email from the Libertarian Party, which is the third largest political party in the United States of America. And this is their email about Bin Laden, which just a little bit different spin on the situation. Not that they're against his assassination per se. Here it is. Libertarian Party celebrates end of Bin Laden era, Washington. Libertarian Party Chairman Mark Hinkle issued the statement today, and this is May 2nd, that's Monday from this week. I'm glad to hear of the death of Osama bin Laden, who had no qualms about slaughtering American civilians. Unfortunately, bin Laden leaves behind an evil legacy in the United States. The Department of Homeland Security, the TSA, which is the airport frisking people, the Patriot Act, warrantless wiretaps, the state secrets doctrine, and other violations of Americans' civil and economic rights. Just like Osama bin Laden, these programs must be terminated. President Obama must also end the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. It's time to stop being the world's policeman. It's time to bring all those troops home. Our government should also end its foreign aid programs, which create future terrorists by funding many dictators around the world. The Libertarian Party platform, Section 3.3, states, quote, American foreign policy should seek an America at peace with the world. Our foreign policy should emphasize defense against attack from abroad and enhance the likelihood of peace by avoiding foreign entanglements. We would end the current U.S. government policy of foreign intervention, including military and economic aid. We recognize the right of all people to resist tyranny and defend themselves and their rights. We condemn the use of force and especially the use of terrorism against the innocent, regardless of whether such acts are committed by governments or by political or revolutionary groups, unquote. In 2008, the press release goes on to say the Libertarian National Committee adopted resolutions calling for an end to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan specifically. That's just the press release from the Libertarian Party, and some things you may have not heard so succinctly stated before. I know I'm certainly concerned about, besides the Patriot Act, in which if a certain government official says that you are a terrorist or suspected of terrorism or whatever, you can be arrested, you can be imprisoned, sequestered, no right to trial, no right to lawyer, forever.
Echoes of McCarthy.
Now, that is so against what America, I thought, when I was growing up in the 50s, that's what I was taught in school. First of all, we don't do preemptive strikes like Iraq was.
Right.
We have the right to a fair and speedy trial. And of course, it's innocent until proven guilty. Not guilty if somebody says you're guilty and that's it. And you say, well, government wouldn't say somebody was guilty unless they really... Well, sure, they could. They could get it wrong. We've discovered many people, thanks to DNA testing, are imprisoned, but they weren't guilty of the original crime. And so if our criminal justice system makes mistakes, I think our government, especially minor officials, and even the president can make mistakes at times. So that's my opinion. Opinions expressed in the show, of course, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. And I don't want to get Dennis in trouble here, but I am very concerned about the preservation of our basic principles of freedom and liberty, and our judicial system has been compromised by the Patriot Act. And it got reestablished just by a narrow vote last time in Congress, though. So, and I don't like the airport security x-rays and or pat-downs into our private receptacles. Homeland Security, I don't see anything that they've done other than issue fear alerts for things that have never happened.
What do you say to the people? And this is really, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but what do you say to the people that claim we would never have had the ability to capture bin Laden had it not been for some, questionable ways, methods of getting that information? In other words, they had the detainees, and they may have used, you've heard terms like waterboarding and things like that. They may have used these things to get the information that eventually led to his...
Finally, it only took a dozen people to take him out, so to speak. And that was all done through intelligence. It had nothing to do directly that I see from the war in Iraq, and maybe... You know, he moved to Pakistan to his nice headquarters because things were getting a little tough to live in the caves of Afghanistan.
I mean, he had money. I mean, come on, right?
Well, yes, he had money.
No, but I mean the questionable interrogation techniques they used to get that information.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's what this, the libertarian, the quotes that you just read, that's where they hit the hardest is, look, there's still a lot of this stuff going on. There's still people detained.
Well, the torture tactics they have available today are so bad that you know, that I can imagine I'd give up quick with the level of pain and disorientation and embarrassment and so on that they can engender.
Right.
But I think that is a violation of civil rights of anybody, including some that we've grabbed. Let's you know, you have to keep in perspective that Al-Qaeda is maybe a group at most of about 10,000 people worldwide out of 6 billion.
Right.
You know, it's nothing to be afraid of. I mean, we kill 50,000 people a year on our highways because of car accidents. And you say, well, that's just accidents. Yeah, but we could do something to prevent that if we wanted to work on it. So, yeah, you know, what's his name? Stossel, who is with ABC and has a show. Is it Gene Stossel? He has a cable TV show also. He's pointed out, too, he's written a book. What should we really be afraid of?
Right.
You know, where are the actual risks in our society? What should we work on eliminating as to make us safer? And it's not Al-Qaeda. That's it. Well, even without bin Laden, there's, you know, statements that somebody, I heard this morning, issued, oh, we'll always remember him and... You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, I mean, they were always looking for that statement, so the media worldwide will broadcast that some crazy guy living in a cave said that Al-Qaeda is going to, you know, follow his ideal or whatever. But there just wasn't that many people in the group. And a few people, crazies everywhere, including Americans that live here, have nothing to do with a political agenda, and they flip out and grab an automatic weapon and start shooting. I mean,
exactly.
You know, we've got a lot of risks around us all the time. And, you know, to start we're $1 trillion deeper in debt, you know, now because of the unnecessary war in Iraq and
right.
It's true at the outset, probably bin Laden was in Afghanistan, but he escaped our approach then, and that war has been well documented. We made some real bad tactical errors in trying to grab him. We decided to fight the government more than look for bin Laden.
Right.
And look where that's got us now. I mean, we haven't even won the war in Afghanistan against the Taliban, a bunch of corrupt cronies of warlords in power over there now. So, and had nothing to do with bin Laden. So there's bad people all around the world, and maybe some people like to see him dead. I don't like, and wasn't mentioned here by the Libertarian Party, but, you know, in... Was it 2010, it was officially announced in a Security Council of the U.S. that our policy is now that the president has the choice of assassinating anybody he wants to.
Hmm. It's interesting.
In America, Americans or non-Americans. Well, I mean, you don't even have to declare war. So, I mean, I thought for years the CIA was doing it anyway.
Right.
Just like James Bond, you know, License to Kill. Mm-hmm. They were doing it anyway. It didn't take the leader of England to give authority.
No. They'd rather not know if you think
one,
about it.
One at a time, of course.
Sure.
Yeah. And we probably know that spies and spying, counterintelligence, blah, blah, blah. There are times when they do that. Should they or not, I don't know. But I don't like anybody to have that power, whether it's CIA people or whatever, because, you know, any one of us could be the victims of that.
And, you're exactly right. You know, I for one, wasn't celebrating the death of a human being. You know what I mean?
No,
it was just kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I think now it seems like, and we weren't there, we don't know.
No.
But the evidence they found is that he actually was in control pretty much of the major Al-Qaeda attacks since 9/11. So, I mean, according to all the computer files and that he wasn't just a figurehead these last few years living in splendor or sort of splendor.
Right.
I wouldn't live in that place. That
I know. Compound. Did you see?
But it was considered an upper middle class, at least, compound.
$1 million, they said.
Big, tall walls, anyway.
Barbed wire.
Yeah. It's not inexpensive to keep that barbed wire sharp.
Hey, right. Know.
People got to climb up there with their files and keep sharpening those
barbs.
They
got a new helicopter out of the deal, I heard, too.
Well, it was destroyed, but they've got the remains of it.
Sure.
Interesting that the first time they used stealth helicopters, brand new technology, that's why they had to destroy the one that it landed a little hard.
Yeah.
And it broke and, oh, God.
It looked like it broke on the wall, didn't it? It was like right next to it.
Didn't
they set it on fire before they left?
Well, they exploded it. I don't know how they did that, but yeah, they had to because it was high-tech technology. And luckily, everybody could get back on the other chopper, I guess, including Ben Laden's
body. Had to walk
them
out. That was strange. But Pakistan is nuclear. They're ready to go.
But they're primarily concerned about nuking India, so it's not too much a worldwide.
Oh, that's
threat.
A relief. Yes. Sarcastically, I said that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I just want people to keep in mind, even here in Dearborn, is that the sorts of things that our government did in response take away our freedoms more than Al-Qaeda ever did. Okay, they took away any freedom at all for about 3,000 people, U.S. citizens here. But and that's tragic. But a lot more Americans are dying all the time for other reasons that could be easily prevented without spending $1 trillion. And let's not forget all the innocent people in Iraq, I mean truly innocent people in Iraq and Afghanistan that have died because of these wars. Not even combatants, folks. About 100,000 people we have killed who were innocent victims.
Collateral damage.
That's right. And so I think we should have some guilt about that. I really do. But, of course, as a pacifist, I think all unnecessary violence is wrong. And the only violence I would support is kind of like what the Libertarian says, and that is upon a direct attack.
Right.
Which means, as Osama bin Laden and his group attacked us, we need to go after him and his group, but not Afghanistan, not Iraq, and I think it could all have been done covertly. It might have still taken 10 years, but I think it could have been done covertly. So anyway, okay. Well, that spent too much time on that. Didn't want to spend a quarter of the hour.
No.
Oh, well. In the Press and Guide from last Sunday, this is May 1st, you should take a look and see that they've detailed, because it has the Mayor O'Reilly in Dearborn, he's presented his three-year budget. They can only, of course, approve the first yearly budget, but it's a three-year budget, so this is what they're probably almost guaranteed going to do in the second and third year. And there's going to be cuts, so it itemizes which libraries are going to be eliminated, which pools, and so on. And so you should read that. We've pretty much gone over that in past shows here, even talked to Mayor O'Reilly here on this show during our Radiothon, a special two-hour broadcast. And that, of course, was on April 15th. If you go to whfr.fm, you click on the journal button and choose 4:15:11, you can hear that. Mayor O'Reilly's in the second hour of that two-hour broadcast. Of course.
I was just going to say, they outline these cuts. I'm over behind like Oakwood Hospital by Tenike. We frequent that park. And I was walking my dog around the park, and there were two tennis courts, one of which was converted to a outdoor roller hockey, inline skate hockey place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're within the fence. And then behind that, outside of the fencing, was a basketball court with one basket. It's all torn up now. I asked a friend of mine who is in the area, and he plays hockey there regularly. He started the Tenike Hockey League or whatever, and he says, yep, they're putting in two brand new tennis courts and a full court basketball. Full court with two hoops, two basketball nets.
Great.
And, well, yeah, it sounds great, but there's no plans for replacing the hockey rink.
Oh.
Well, I know. And here's something. Well, that's too bad. But, I mean, doesn't it make sense that if you're going to make changes like that, and this is considerable money they're putting into resurfacing all these things, and wouldn't it make sense to cater to what the individuals in the neighborhood are, the things that they want, as opposed to just coming in and making it what you want? Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Or we're spending money on, resurfacing and redoing and putting new nets in. But you know what? They were playing hockey. Maybe they were playing too much. Let's put basketball nets in. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I think I may end up going to some of these meetings and finding out a little bit more.
I think everybody should be more informed in these things. People have to realize the economic situation that Dearborn's in, which is quite difficult.
It is.
I don't see any other way around this other than raising the millage to 15, which they're legally able to do in the city, and then ask for another 3.5 in November. I don't know if that's official yet, but that's the plan that Mayor O'Reilly suggested. And I'd vote for it. I'm a Dearborn taxpayer. It won't raise my dollars I pay in any more than what I paid 4 years ago.
Right.
My taxes have been declining because my home value has been declining.
Yeah.
But we have to pay for the city services. I don't think anybody wants to sacrifice. They cannot attack too much the fire and the police. because of charter, they can't let people go. They could do things, I think, probably other things to their budgets.
So, right.
And delay new equipment, but that's a minor part of that. So it's I think it's the best way to go. I don't know any other way that they can balance these things. A lot of the cuts they're suggesting are not as far as they could go. If they really had to, they could cut some more things. For example, I believe they're only cutting one of the branch libraries, not...
Which one is it? Was it Snow?
No.
I'm not going to make you read. Anyway, they always going to say, do you remember the mayor when he was...
But it's not Bryant, I know.
No. And, you know, and that's right, the heart of West Dearborn. I would think that
yeah,
would...
Snow.
Snow.
And the health department, city health department is going to go.
The city health department. That's in Centennial, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The mayor did also speak of ways to increase revenue, which I thought was a really, he's aware that not only do we have to make cuts and ask for more money from the people, but we can do different things to create revenue in the city itself. And I don't mean giving extra parking tickets. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things they can do. I'm anxious to see what those will include. I don't know. At one time I thought, they were talking about cutting back some of the things that go on during homecoming. And I thought that I personally thought that that was a huge revenue raiser, but apparently he said that they're lucky to break even.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's pretty well set for this year at least. There's not going to be any real terrible decline in that. I'd like to feature now. Obviously, there's a couple stories in the Sunday Press and Guide about how the education proposals that Snyder has made that is cutting funding to the schools, and that various local officials, school board people, and others, including the unions, are not pleased. That's, I think, the most generous way
yeah.
To state their reactions here. George Duraney, our local representative who's been on the show several times now, he wrote an editorial comment, his own opinion, for the Dearborn Times-Herald, which came out Wednesday, May 4th. I'd like to just share it with you. It's a little long, but just take a listen to his spin on this. He says, I'm proud to stand up for my hometown of Dearborn in the Michigan House of Representatives. I'm especially proud to stand up for Dearborn Public Schools, not just as a supporter, but as a proud graduate. I know firsthand how well our schools prepare students and how they continue to do so for thousands of children and teens in our community. As I've participated in committees and projects with Dearborn schools throughout the years, I've seen how our parents, teachers, administrators, community members, and local officials work together for one purpose, to make sure our kids get the very best education available. We work hard for our schools in Dearborn because we understand what is at stake. We know that our schools must be able to prepare our young people so they can compete for good-paying jobs in this rapidly changing 21st century global economy. To attract these jobs to Michigan, we must have the highly talented workers that new and existing businesses rely on to thrive. That's what it will take to create jobs and diversify our economy. It's all connected, and education is the strongest link. Weakening that link by cutting our funding to our schools is one of the biggest mistakes our state can make. Unfortunately, some in Lansing do not understand this at all. The current budget proposal includes drastic cuts to schools that will make it impossible, notice he says impossible,
right,
for our kids to be educated properly. Most disturbing to me, the proposal singles out Dearborn schools. It goes beyond the millions in per pupil cuts being made elsewhere and makes our school district one of only two in the state that loses additional funds as well. And it's actually two kinds of funds. We mentioned those before. One is for bilingual education,
right,
which we desperately need in this area. And the second one is the disadvantaged students. And that funding cut is also going to only further disadvantage them, in fact. Well, okay, so he says that the economically disadvantaged students and the bilingual kids are 40% of our students in Dearborn. 40% of our students are getting... this extra
right.
necessary education because of these funds from the state. Apparently, some in Lansing think these kids aren't worth educating. They think those kids can be tossed aside. Well, that is not okay with me, says George Duraney. From the rallies I've hosted and attended in our community and the parents and teachers I met protesting in Lansing, it's clear this is not okay with you either. In Dearborn, we have a diverse community, and that adds to our strength. We value every member of our community. We need the resources to enable every child. That goes on. There's another section for that. What I'd like to also share for you now is another opinion that comes from editorial writers on the New York Times. And thank you. And it's a very, very good essay, one of the most circulated, most emailed, as they say, of things appearing in the Times for the last couple of weeks. Dave Eggers and Niev Clements Caligari have written this editorial, The High Cost of Low Teacher Salaries. Both of them are founders of the 826 National Tutoring Centers and producers of the documentary American Teacher. Okay, well, they say, when we don't get results we want in our military endeavors, we don't blame the soldiers. We don't say, it's these lazy soldiers and their bloated benefits plans. That's why we haven't done better in Afghanistan. No, if the results aren't there, we blame the planners. We blame the generals, the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. No one contemplates blaming the men and women fighting every day in the trenches for little pay and scant recognition. And yet in education, we do just that. When we don't like the way our students score on international standardized tests, we blame the teachers. When we don't like the way particular schools perform, we blame the teachers and restrict their resources. Compare this with our approach to the military. When results on the ground are not what we hoped, we think of ways to better support soldiers. We try to give them better tools, better weapons, better protection, better training. Yeah, in some schools, teachers need better weapons.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. And when recruiting is down, we offer incentives. We have a rare chance now with many teachers near retirement to prove we're serious about education. The first step is to make the teaching profession more attractive to college graduates. This will take some doing. At the moment, the average teacher's pay is on par with that of a toll taker or bartender. Teachers make 14% less than professionals in other occupations that require similar levels of education, like a master's degree or a doctorate. In real terms, teacher salaries have declined for 30 years. The average starting salary is $39,000. The average ending salary after 25 years in the profession is $67,000. This prices teachers out of home ownership for in 32 metropolitan areas and makes raising a family on one salary nearly impossible. So how do teachers cope? 62% work outside the classroom to make ends meet. For Eric Benner, an award-winning history teacher in Keller, Texas, money has been a constant struggle. He has two children and for 15 years has been unable to support them on his salary. Every weekday, he goes directly from Trinity Springs Middle School to drive a forklift at Floor and Decor. He works until 11 every night, then gets up and starts all over again. Does this look like a plan? Either on the state or federal level, does it look like an A plan? That is the best we can do. They go on to say, we've been working with public school teachers for 10 years. Every spring we see many of the best teachers leave the profession. They're mowed down by the long hours, low pay, the lack of support, and respect. Imagine a novice teacher thrown into an urban school, told to teach 5 classes a day with up to 40 students each. Or in Detroit, it's going to be 65 students
right,
each.
Right, right, right.
Later in fall of this year. At the year's end, if test scores haven't risen enough, he or she is called a bad teacher. By the way, I'm going to move away for this a second. I just realized that Robert Bob is not going to continue as the emergency manager of the Detroit Public Schools. He's being replaced almost immediately by a Roy Roberts, former head of GM.
Now, and was that Bob's decision, Mr. Bobbs? Because I thought
I really
it was up
know.
To him, and he could have stayed on indefinitely. Wasn't the idea?
Well,
okay?
Of course, he's gotten a lot of heat recently, but
sure.
But now Roy Roberts, who I heard on Craig Folly's show, was it this morning or yesterday morning? He loves the situation because he's got more power now.
Absolutely,
because of what Governor Snyder has done in our legislature,
it's almost unlimited.
Yeah, and I've tried to say this on the show, too, before, folks. If you're worried about creeping socialism, then you should be worried about big government in general getting bigger and more powerful, becoming more totalitarian, okay, in nature. And I won't call it dictatorship, but realize this emergency financial manager thing, whenever the governor feels like it, whenever he decides that a school district or a city needs new financial management, he can appoint a person and they go in and they have full power now to basically neuter any elected officials. For example, Benton Harbor, and this was on national news last week, they have a city council and a mayor elected by the people, And the emergency financial manager out there has just got done saying, you can meet, but you can't pass any motions. I'm going to make all the decisions. Now, that's a power takeover, you know, and that can be done, remember, even if the city or the school district is not bankrupt.
And so many of...
That's unbelievable. And these are Republicans, folks.
Right. So many things we have in place are to prevent a situation like that where one person has that kind of power. This is a country that's supposed to be about checks and balances.
There's no way to sue or appeal or anything. The governor appoints emergency financial manager. Your city is done for. And of course, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to, of course, get rid of all contracts and cut all pay and cut all benefits. And that means for everybody. And or like Detroit Public Schools, I assume Robert Bob's proposals are going to be in effect even more so. But now they can just devastate the teacher union even more.
Right.
And the resources for the schools. And by the way, this guy, Roy Roberts, was not one of the bright leaders of GM during the big meltdown. Okay, he came in, I think, second or third when GM was going bankrupt, and his background is not even cars. So
or schools.
No. But he just loves all the power. He said that several times. I love the power. I can do whatever I want.
Wow. Mm.
Well, that sounds like most dictators to me, folks.
Yeah.
You know, democracy is a tough go. We all have to participate. There's push and shove. There's debates. But there's nothing like it in the world, and we're losing it. I'm sorry to say that. That's my personal opinion. We're losing it with all of these things. I mentioned them earlier, but now with emergency financial managers, which, leave it to Michigan. It's a Michigan thing, folks. It's a terrible, terrible direction to take. And I know that there's probably better managers than some of the people we elect from our own cities for either the school board or whatever. Some of them are just not directly knowledgeable about what may work. But what other answer is there? We want all the governments, the state governments, the federal governments, to make all the decisions for everybody. They don't always necessarily know what's best either, you know. And somebody making the decision way at the top, they're bound to mess up somebody at the bottom, who's the exception.
You have to believe that.
That's why local control by real people is the best way. And so,
then they have a vested interest. So many other people come in and they take the path of least resistance, you know.
Let me finish up this article. The high cost of low teacher salaries. Again, we indicated the long hours for teachers. And every year, 20% of teachers in urban districts quit. 20%.
Wow.
Nationwide, 46% of teachers quit before their fifth year. The turnover cost the United States $7.34 billion yearly. The effects within schools, especially those in urban communities where turnover is the highest, is devastating. But we can reverse course. In the next 10 years, over half of the nation's nearly 3.2 million public school teachers will become eligible for retirement. Who will replace them? How do we attract and keep the best minds in the profession? People talk about accountability, measurements, tenure, test scores, and pay for performance. These questions are worthy of debate, but are secondary to recruiting and training teachers and treating them fairly. I think treating them fairly means they got to have a contract. They have to have a union to support them. They need a big advocate to support them.
Yeah, but wasn't there the case where they left it up to the teachers to figure it out and they did just fine?
Yeah, and a couple smaller examples of reorganization, and they turned over all the planning to the teachers.
Wasn't
that
in Washington?
Lines. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but there's other answers other than
technically
cuts.
It's illegal in some states for teachers to be administrators.
Okay.
Because you're taking away administrative jobs, so that you know. So, I think Michigan may be one of those. So, never the twain can meet, you know.
Gotcha.
Of course, and we pointed out too that the best school in the world in turnover, in success rates, is in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And in Finland, folks, there's only 2% turnover, it says here. They actually mentioned Finland in this. Only 2% leave the teaching job. Of course, because it's the second highest paid job in Finland. And it's well paid. I mean, it's well paid to be a teacher. And so those people in Finland, I mean, I think some of our teachers might want to make a trip to Finland.
Well, they're only taking the cream of the crop.
There.
When you reward that well, you get the best of the best.
Absolutely. Why do you think people want to become lawyers and doctors and even investment bankers on Wall Street? They'll tell you it's the money.
Yeah.
stupid. come on, I can make a fortune here with my mere master's degree.
Sure.
You know, maybe as a Wall Street banker. And I think the starting salaries of investment bankers is $120,000 a year. That's the starting salary.
Yeah.
Not $39,000. So somebody, why would you be a business teacher in a school who's got to put up with the same long hours and no respect and minimal benefits when you can start out in investment banking? And I think there might be an ethical or moral reason why you would choose teaching.
Right.
I certainly had that in mind. South Korea, by the way, only 1% of South Korean teachers leave after a year.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. McKinsey polled 900 top-tier American college students and found that 68% would consider teaching if salary started at $65,000 and rose to a minimum of $150,000 after 25 years. He says, could we do this? They say, if we're committed to winning the future, we should. If any administration is capable of tackling this, it's the current one. I've been on hiring committees, too. You can set up higher standards for the teachers you hire, too.
Right.
You know, as you said, you can really get the cream of the crop. Number one, because they will apply for a job that has more pay, you know. But you can also know that they will have more, they've had more success in their programs. They've maybe demonstrated it in teaching co-op experience.
Sure.
that they can do well. Maybe they've also had years of experience somewhere else.
If not, maybe they have some new, fresh ideas.
Exactly.
And, yeah. You know, and I think that, I don't know, this is not a scientific poll that I took, but I've talked to people around campus, and they like that some of the newer teaching models as opposed to the old way.
To conclude the editorial from the New York Times from Dave Eggers and Niev Caligari, for those who say, how do we pay for this? Well, how are we paying for three concurrent wars?
Hmm.
How do we pay for the interstate highway system? Or the bailout of the savings and loans in 1989 and that of the investment banks in 2008. How did we pay? Well, 2008, then we borrowed money from China.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be crazy to borrow money from China to save our schools? But nonetheless, how did we pay for the equally ambitious project of sending Americans to the moon? We had the vision, and we had the will, and we found a way. Those three wars, come on, it's $1 trillion so far. It's about, I think I was figuring it out, it's $700 million a week in Libya. $700 million a week.
And that's in Libya.
And Afghanistan and Iraq, which are still going on. All together, it's billions every year. And that's pretty simple to me. That's even Mayor O'Reilly, when he was here, I happened to mention my crazy thought about that
mm-hmm.
you know, that where that money should go if we just end those wars. And he said, I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of that. Let's get the money back on our homeland. And I know it seems crass. I've been a teacher a long time. I am retired now, except for my part-time job here at WHFR. We can get better people, and we can get people that will stay in the job if we respect them. We give them benefits and pay, but we also give them advocates, their unions, to stand behind them and to improve their status too. One of the things the dentist saw, and it's about halfway through, but we'll cover this after we go to Jim Hightower, and this is very interesting, is that the teachers in Dearborn have settled for less money. They have a new contract, and they're going to take pay cuts for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
But also, they were put in charge of choosing their own health insurance contracts.
You know a little bit about that.
I do.
So, awesome.
I think it's a great idea, and it's worked before. Let's listen to Jim Hightower and his comment for this week, our friendly progressive syndicated columnist out of Austin, Texas, of all places.
Republican congressional leaders don't seem to be the quickest bunnies in the litter. Having taken their blunt budget acts to Medicare, Medicaid, Head Start, EPA, NPR, and dozens of other popular and effective programs, they then scampered to save one of the least popular and least effective federal programs on the books, the annual taxpayer subsidy for big oil. As gasoline prices were rising to $4 a gallon and higher, the House GOP voted unanimously to let the oil giants continue siphoning $4 billion a year out of our public treasury. All 241 of the Republican/Tea Party House members, with not even one dissenter in the bunch, declared that in this time of a supposed budget crisis, the neediest among us are not the elderly and the poor, but the little waifs of big oil. Meanwhile, ExxonMobil just announced a 69% leap in profits this year, while Chevron, ConocoPhillips, and others are enjoying similar jumps in theirs. Guess what percentage of those enormous profits the corporations are likely to pay in taxes? Zilch. Their lobbyists have punched such gaping holes in our tax code that they can escape paying anything for the privileges and benefits they get from America. Exxon, for one oily example, had a $19 billion profit in 2009, but not only did it pay exactly zero in federal income taxes, it manipulated the system to get a $156 million rebate from us. Likewise, Chevron and ConocoPhillips had multi-billion dollar profits that year, paid not a dime in taxes, and also got refunds. This is Jim Hightower saying Republican lawmakers had a clear choice in dealing with the deficit. So why did they choose to cut off your granny's health care while helping these corporate billionaires make off like bandits? I guess it's a matter of who you really love.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back live again on the new WHFR Journal for Friday, May 6, 2011. The station making waves, providing news and information you just can't hear anywhere else on your dial. Yep. Okay, what about those teachers in Dearborn? Well, as it's reported in the May 4th edition of Press and Guide, and Dennis, you're a newspaper guy. Did you notice the new format? New heading?
It's interesting,
It's all different look.
It is. And it's different on the web, too.
I think they're going to drop down to a maybe a Metro Times version, you know, a small tabloid-sized paper eventually. I don't know. They're trying to save money, obviously, but just don't understand the... Is this a cheaper font to rent? Or I don't know what it is.
It's more condensed.
Yeah, they do say that their website is getting a lot of hits and people get information daily right. That way. And it doesn't cost anything, which has got to hurt them, but they have a lot of ads on that site too.
They do.
And so that's compensating.
Well, can you imagine the amount of money they're saving on print? I mean, that's substantial. Paper costs, like everything else, goes up. Cost of freight went up.
Everything. Well, we don't want to, it's always... My conscience hurts anytime I have to see paper that came from a tree and killed another tree.
Good.
It should. And so that's why I dropped down my New York Times to Sunday only. And the rest of the time I have a – because if you're a subscriber at all, folks, let me point this out, to New York Times, like Sunday only, which is a big paper. And
yeah, that's a tree right there.
A lot of information. It's a weekly news summary as long as cultural news and – all kinds of stuff in there. I love that. It's a ritual ever since my college days to spend a couple of hours every Sunday morning reading it through and through. It's just very tactile. Anyway, the teachers in Dearborn, they've agreed to cuts, union-operated insurance. I'm glad they're able to survive this way. They're probably threatened with other losses, but they agreed to 3.5% this year and another 3.63% cut next year. Mm-hmm. I wonder how they get these numbers. How do they get 3.63? I guess it's just a number of dollars, finally. Okay, $1,500 cut, and somebody finally says, oh, that's 3.63.
Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Yeah, because, they must negotiate for just dollars and then they calculate it later. And at the top tier, top tier teachers, they get a slight improvement. It's not cost of living, but a slight improvement. But they don't get these step increases from year to year. In other words, automatic pay raises just for being there. And that's how your salary builds over the years. Because basically the so-called increases in your pay are not much there. And teachers at the top even will take a 3% cut this year and 3.1% next year. And I bet most of those teachers are at the top. So I'm not happy that happened for the reasons we just mentioned. That means that new teachers, if they are graduating at all and they want to be a teacher, and if there were any jobs in Dearborn, which there aren't, they wouldn't want to come. They wouldn't want to come, probably.
I wonder what the where was it, Finland? The Finlandians would think of this particular agreement. Now, off the air, you explained a little bit to me about the union-operated insurance. How does that work?
Okay. Well, as the story says, I just turned the page to 4A, the biggest change will be the union taking over responsibility for health insurance. The district will contribute a flat amount per worker, and the union will work with state insurance groups and a consultant to provide coverage. The goal is to provide the maximum benefit for the least cost. Well, gee whiz, folks. The American Federation of Teachers here negotiated for that right. We wanted that right. This is over 20 years ago we got it. John McDonald and the AFT Local 1650 here. Because the school board was getting a bad deal. They weren't spending any time doing what's called comparison shopping on what are the best health care plans. Okay. And the union knew that. They're just going with the same coverage year to year, and it's not the best for the dollar. So we said, you tell us what dollars per person are available, and you control that. You know, what dollars per person can we spend on health care? And we will find the best policies.
Okay.
And oh my gosh, this goes on for like 25 plus years. Henry Ford Community College full-time teachers have had the much better health care plans than our friends in the K-12. Just because we could choose the health care plans that were the best,
but you
giving the most for the same amount of dollars.
But you made a really good point. It takes a person or a small committee to be able to do that research and to come up with it, because we're not just talking about the most cover. We're talking about the best value, because you have a limited number of dollars.
Yeah, it seems like I just mentioned here that, somebody's going to pay for a consultant to help the K-12 union to make the best choice. Here we had a team of business professors, you know, full-time faculty business professors, who are working all year round comparing deals and contacting insurance companies.
Now, how often would you do that now to update it, would you think? Or is it?
Well, you have to have it in place before the next contract.
Okay.
You know, but new programs are always being introduced.
Sure.
You know, new competitive programs. So you have to keep doing that research ongoing.
Right.
You can't wait to do it, because there's too much to compare and renegotiate and so on. But it's a great idea, and I'd like to believe they got the idea from us.
I would think they would use your insurance as a model.
They're an AFT local, too, in the Dearborn Public Schools. And it's just probably the superintendent didn't want to do it. I don't know. They'd want to lose the power or something. They're not. It's the same amount of dollars, folks. It's a wonderful idea if you have people that are smart enough and going to put in the time to do the comparison shopping. And I'm sorry to say, well, the administrators of Henry Ford Community College didn't want to do that much work to find the best health care plans for us. So
it worked out, though.
Yeah, the teachers took over.
Well, you know, and I was going to say, why don't K-12 talk to Henry Ford? But they may be dealing with quite a bit less money, too. You know, I mean, it's all relative, isn't it? You can only get the best insurance you can buy with the X amount of dollars.
Yeah, right, so, of course, yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad it went in place, and it only took 2 years, right?
Yeah, but I'm sorry for the teachers losing that money, but maybe...
Hey, no, they approved it overwhelmingly, that contract. So they saw something good in it.
Rather than more layoffs, maybe. Yeah. I think that's probably what they... You know, on the bargaining table, you're going to be threatened with that.
Right. Well, there's always that option. Can I go right into this here?
Sure.
This is the Dearborn hopes to offer a combined high school college program.
Yeah, great idea. And I hate to say it, but I had this idea years ago, and so did one of the former superintendents of K-12. But this is, again, going back 20 years.
Now, I know you know about this. Is it comparable to what they're doing here? Your idea? Would it have been similar?
Oh, this is much better. This is much better. And thanks to, I think it was Dr. Mee, and maybe Superintendent Winston has something to do with that. And Ed Chillens now has come back out of retirement to help head it up. But
I'll just read from here. More Dearborn Public School students can earn combined diplomas and associate's degrees in 5 years under a groundbreaking new plan announced Monday. The Henry Ford Collegiate Academy Early College Program would allow students to earn an associate's degree in either arts or science, at no cost to them. And this is according to Gail Schenkman, Dearborn's Associate Superintendent of Secondary Education. So if I understand this correctly, and they said they're recruiting people, and I know they don't mean recruiting in the traditional sense, but they're kind of looking for people that would be qualified as early as eighth grade, even though they wouldn't necessarily start the big part of this program until, I think it says here, in 11th grade. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't start taking the college classes until 11th grade.
Instead of some of the electives they might be taking in high school, they will come over to Henry Ford Community College to start their Associate of Arts degree.
Exactly. And then so when their class is graduating at the end of the senior year, these particular students will, they can, if they can walk with the kids if they would like mm-hmm. to, but they don't actually qualify for their diploma / associate's degree till their fifth year.
Right, one more year.
One more year. Their 13th year of school after their senior year of high school takes place completely at the college.
But that is so cool. That is so fantastic.
No, it's beyond cool.
And your first sentence, no extra cost to them.
That is awesome.
Now, does that mean extra cost? Do they still, I didn't read it all the way through, do they still have to pay for the tuition though?
No. You allow students to earn an associate's.
No extra cost to them?
No cost to them.
Unbelievable.
So it's part of their tax dollars at work for the, but you know, and this isn't for everyone. You and I both know that. There's going to be people that just aren't ready for college.
Well, they may choose not to go to this college, for example. They can choose to go in any college they want to, and that's fine. This program does lock them in. I assume there's ways to opt out after you're in it.
I would think so.
At a certain point.
You know, and you have to hold a certain standard.
Yeah, you know. I don't think it's... you know, our reputation and our variety of programs, which are so easily transferable everywhere, you know, there are reasons to go to other schools, no doubt. But I think it's the greatest deal I've ever heard. Of course, Dearborn taxpayers would get a break for their kids coming to the college anyway, lower tuition. But this way, the kids can just in one more year, because they got to do more work. You know, they're starting to take college-level classes in their junior year, as well as their high school classes that are required. But
you know, the average...
I would have loved that. I was so sick and tired with high school games and social cliques and... Then again, I wasn't a joiner. I wasn't the most popular kid.
Right, right.
I was made fun of all the time because I got the highest grades. You know how I mean, it's tough being at the top, you know.
Yeah, looking down at the lowly. But no, but for this, I mean, you and I both know most people, I mean, though an associate's degree is I guess it was created to be done in 2 years. A lot of people can't because of jobs and family situations. So what this particular program is doing is allowing somebody to get that associate's in 1 year because they've been doing it. You know, and in essence, it's one extra year of high school as opposed to two or three. So I'm huge in favor of this. This is awesome.
Yeah, and is it firmly in place? The headline seems to say it's not in place yet.
No, you're right. There are a couple things they still have to work out. It says that, hold on one sec.
See, on this show, we actually dig below the headlines.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, how many media outlets actually do that and usually get things wrong?
Yeah.
But it's very close, folks. It's very close to happening.
It says Michigan has only 3 approved early college programs, and we have one of them with the Henry Ford Early College where we have the kids with dual enrollment, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. No, it seems – oh, they're waiting for the state's okay.
Okay.
So we are waiting for the state. It would be the first in the state to offer such a program. And that was according to Mr. Whiston, and he has no time schedule on this.
Yeah. Well, we have to have the state approval. I'm sure George Durrani will be kicking it through as soon as he can. What a great deal. Now, I just wonder, of course, there's 2 separate budgets, one for Henry Ford Community College and one for the K-12 Dearborn Public Schools.
Right.
Even though it's the same Board of Ed, we have 2 separate budgets. Somebody has to be paying for these extra classes.
Right.
You know, somebody has to be paying for it. But, of course, it's worth every darn penny, and especially to our kids, to get an AA degree that quickly. It's true that when I went to college, I got my bachelor's degree in 2 2/3 years.
That's incredible.
Because, I had a full-ride scholarship, room and board and tuition, and I just went in the summer.
Yeah.
I was crazy. Other people take a vacation. Look, I've got the same amount of money. Why wait? So I was out of my BA in 2 2/3 years.
Yeah, but you loved school, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. New stuff all the time. It's exciting. There's so much to learn. There's so much to... Oh, my gosh. I mean, I feel sorry for those people that don't understand how great learning is, learning new stuff. I know there's a few teachers, out of all the wonderful teachers we have out there, that don't communicate it that way to their students.
That should be a joy, learning.
Yes.
Yeah, no,
learning's a joy every time. I mean, why would you teach a subject unless, of course, your school assigned you to that, if you didn't love it yourself.
Exactly. And you know what? And it's so obvious because that passion, that enthusiasm about a subject is contagious. I had an instructor here. He's an adjunct, Mr. Dennis Ringel. He taught me history, and he got us so involved in the process. Because, you know, Jay, you know the history, if done improperly, can be extremely boring.
History. Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Man. You know, do you know that date? Do you know what happened? You know, I wanted to know the significance of these events, not just that they took place and when. And Mr. Ringel brought that. And there are a lot of instructors here that deserve that kind of recognition.
Well, so, thank you. Yeah, I think it'll be great for the students as soon as they get into that.
And... But, yeah, to answer your question, mm-hmm. It does say in the third paragraph, this plan still needs to be approved by the state. But nobody, according to everything else, nobody sees any reason why it won't be.
Okay, we're going to turn now to news about a Michigan team volunteer, the team volunteer, peace team volunteer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where is it?
Dun.
Oh, my God.
I think it's right here.
There it is. Okay.
Yeah.
We had on this show someone from Peace Action of Michigan.
Yes.
And I mentioned the other group, also Michigan Peace Team. That's their official name. They are working for peace worldwide.
Right.
And now, sometimes they have a militant action, civil rights protest, mm-hmm. if you will, in Michigan. But basically, these people volunteer. They are trained in nonviolence, and they choose to go out and be part of international teams in various places of the world. Well, here's a story about Sandra Quintano, age 60, who is a resident of Port Huron, Michigan. The news is, and this just came out on Tuesday, May 3rd, that she just left the Meir Hospital in Kfar Saba, Israel, on Monday after being treated for two broken wrists and a cut to the head. The injuries occurred as a result of an assault by an Israeli soldier in the village of Izbed Atadbib in the Quilia district of the Palestinian Authority on Sunday afternoon. Ms. Quintano was at the village as a member of Michigan Peace Team, MPT, to participate in nonviolent demonstration and to help prevent violence against civilians, sort of that human shield
sure.
concept,
right.
primarily Palestinians and international activists. MPT is releasing video footage of Ms. Quintano being injured and the time immediately following on their website today. You can go, if you're interested in this tragedy, although broken wrist, watch a few broken wrists. Well, the picture of her there, it doesn't look like it's a happy time for her. She's taped up from the fingers all the way up to her elbow.
And she's 60. Things don't heal as well as when you're, 20.
How can a soldier go crazy and beat somebody up who is not armed, not right. violent, probably wearing special identification showing that they're an international peace team
right.
Rep. You can go to michiganpeaceteam.org and just click on the right place to find that video. Okay? By the way, MPT team members have been in the village since last Friday, along with other local community organizers and international activists, to protest the construction of the separation wall through village land, the confiscation of agricultural and homestead land to build the wall, and to protest the scheduled demolition of 31 homes currently owned occupied by Palestinian families.
Huh.
On Sunday afternoon, Israeli military forces and bulldozers entered the area. Ms. Quintano was injured when soldiers physically assaulted nonviolent activists. And that, of course, is that wall that's been reported for a couple of years that Israel, at one point, well, the United States government has told them, don't build it.
Right.
Don't do that. Because they're also destroying homelands and separating peoples, families, and so on. It just... crazy, I think, although I'm not an expert on that area, but to beat up nonviolent protesters like that, just wrong.
Now,
Ms. Quintano, by the way, is going to be flown back here to the U.S. for further medical care, probably back here already.
She's probably grateful,
too. It says her injuries are serious and will require further treatment.
Now, you talked about the peace organization earlier.
Peace Action.
Yeah, didn't we talk about people going throughout the world? I just remember vividly you saying that's a very noble yet dangerous.
Oh yeah,
tactic, because I mean, for very reason.
Right, the two groups are known to each other and they're related. Peace Action of Michigan and Michigan Peace Team. Actually, Peace Action is a national group, and
right,
there's statewide chapters. A lot of the nonviolent peace groups of the 60s have reformed under the umbrella of Peace Action. But Michigan Peace Team, their job is to go out and be confrontational in a nonviolent way to war and militant actions all around the world, although certainly the Middle East is
in a weird way, sometimes that nonviolent approach creates violence from the other party, and we see that here. It's a dangerous thing, and a lot of guts to the people that do that.
Sometimes you have to throw yourself into the gears of the evil machine,
the mechanism. Yes. Tomorrow, Access Community Health and Research Center presents Healthorama, sponsored by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's tomorrow, Saturday, at Access, 6450 Maple Street in Dearborn. The event includes educational information by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan on affordable health insurance packages, but it also includes free health screenings and information, including height, weight, BMI calculation. Do you know what that is? BMI?
Body mass
index.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's is that kind of a way of gauging your weight? Like what's fat and what isn't?
Well, they say it's more important calculation, and it's something about, you know,
the calipers.
Can you pinch an inch? Mm-hmm. Right, the calipers of fat based on your height and overall weight. So I think there's three variables.
Okay.
But it's probably better than just saying, hey, you look fat. there's other criteria to obesity, apparently.
Apparently. Anyway, they do the BMI calculation, blood pressure screening, HIV, syphilis, and hepatitis B and C testing. And then women over 40 years old can also make appointments in advance for a mammogram and pap smear. That number for that pre-enrollment is 313-216-2207. Okay.
Again, the name of the event?
Oh, I'm sorry. Access is hosting a Healthorama.
Where?
And they're calling it Healthorama Saturday at the Access office at 6450 Maple Street in Dearborn.
Okay, that's tomorrow, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
so,
times?
Yeah. You're
times?
Gonna, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
10 to 3, and you don't need an appointment, but if you're over 40 and a woman,
yeah,
they suggest it.
And that, well, and you... You're exactly right. You would need the appointment for the mammogram and pap smear, and then right, everything else. There are some things for adults. For instance, if you want additional STD testing, it may cost you $25. Mm-hmm. So you can find that out when you're there.
Sexually transmitted disease.
Hey, good. Okay. Very good. Very good.
Mm. Not that I know anything about it.
No, but I mean, well, okay, we know at least what we need to.
Last but not least, for our Canadian listeners, and we're right on the border, and so often here in the U.S., and it's terrible that we go about our lives and we never think about Canada. Not me, but, you know, I try to watch the BBC News every night,
yep,
the CBC News.
CBC.
Every night. Yeah.
Hockey Night in Canada,
well,
too.
Yeah, Stephen Harper, they had a big election 2 days ago, three days ago, Tuesday, and Stephen Harper's Conservatives actually won the election. Now, it's interesting to me that the reason they had this election, because they don't have it on a regular basis in Canada, but there was a vote in Parliament called a no-confidence vote in Canadian Parliament, because their government, the Harper government, the Conservatives, it was found to be in contempt of Parliament because of its failure to disclose the full cost of anti-crime programs, corporate tax cuts, and plans to purchase stealth fighter jets from the U.S.
Huh.
And when they do that, you only got like 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks. It doesn't say in the article, but it's a short period to maybe a month to start campaigning. So it's a whole big-time national election.
Oh, my gosh.
For Parliament, representatives all over the place, and of course the lead party gets to choose the prime minister.
We have people campaigning now.
Well, it's a total waste of cost to spread out presidential or other campaigns to 2 years.
I agree.
And, you know, by the time you're done campaigning, who's got any energy left for the job?
Right, right.
Which is two different things. You know, you can be a great campaigner, and then you're a lousy politician in office.
Or leader, you know?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
I mean, it's really two different skills. So in any event, I like the fact that they give free and equal time on the CBC to all the major candidates and locally provincial, all the minor candidates for office, no matter what party they're with. But the big loss here is not so much they have several political parties, not
right,
just two. The New Democratic Party was